I'm Jordan Gonsalves, and I'm a journalist. Join me on my new podcast, But We Loved, coming May 15th, where queer elders recount the amazing history they've lived through.
In the middle of Wall Street, they stopped traffic. They were doing a die-in.
And in the process, share little gems of wisdom for the next generation.
The key is to understanding yourself, learning to love and embrace yourself.
You can listen to But We Loved May 15th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh?
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Loudermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com. And we're talking about bats this week.
Bats in danger.
Yeah. My last encounter with bats, really, because I mean, I know they're around, but I don't really see them. But the last time I really had an experience with bats was when I was on my honeymoon. Me and my wife were in Jalapa, Mexico, which is near Puerto Vallarta. And it's a beautiful place, and they have all these, like, huts that you stay in. And we noticed when we got in that there were – that at the top of the huts, they had these, like, plastic screens blocking off the outside. And
yeah.
At first we thought, oh, I guess they, you know, just forgot to put a window up there. That, you know, maybe it blows rain in. We found out later.
You're such an optimist, Robert.
I know. I found out later that this was to keep the fruit bats from coming in.
Oh. Because
the fruit bats will, like, fly around on the island, and they'll apparently get, like, eat and just gorge themselves on fruit, and then go shack up wherever they can find cover. And if they can get inside one of these huts, they'll do it. And they'll just hang up in there and then just crap all over the place during their stay there. So, like, people were staying here, you know, often I'm thinking on, you know, romantic getaways or their honeymoon or some special vacation. And it takes a lot of trouble to get there. You have to go on this, like, little boat, this really jarring open boat ride to get there. And then, you know, you put your luggage inside, leave to hit the beach, come back, and there's bat guano over everything.
Yeah, that's not the way to kick off a honeymoon.
But luckily, we didn't encounter that. We just encountered plagues of crabs every night.
Ooh, like the crabs we mentioned in Amazing Infestations?
Yeah, about like that. Like lots and lots of crabs, like crawling around. You had to just get in the bed at night and just not get out.
Yeah, my bat experiences are not nearly so exciting. I remember growing up in the Northeast. We'd be hanging out, maybe playing a game of kickball as the sun was setting, and the bats would start to come out. Being primarily nocturnal creatures. And we did this weird thing where we would throw our shoes up into the air to see if the bats would go after them. And they would, you know, they would fly down and dive bomb for our shoes, but they never picked them up. I imagine our shoe was probably I never saw a bat, you know, fly away with one of my shoes on. But, yeah, that was pretty much my bat experience.
I've heard of people jumping on trampolines before. And if they're jumping on them at night or around dusk, that their hair will, you know, fly up in the air, and the bats will come and like dive at their hair.
Oh no! Yeah, that's enough to.
So,
to get
if you need another
trampoline.
Reason not to jump on a trampoline, there you go.
So, unfortunately for the insect-eating bats, there's a pretty serious bat plague going around that you may have heard about, because it's been around, I think, since 2005, 2006 in the winter.
Yeah, a caver discovered this, right?
As a caver up in upstate New York, I think in a Howe's Cave near Albany, New York. And this caver took the first known pictures of the bats with what they're calling white nose syndrome.
Yeah, they're just... There's a number of bats in there. They've got this white stuff on their nose. Some of them were kind of emaciated. Some of them were dead.
Mm-hmm.
And people began to figure out that there was something wrong here.
Yeah, and it's not just something. It's a pretty darn big deal, because more than 1 million bats have died so far. And at least 3 endangered species, the Indiana bat, the Virginia big-eared bat, and possibly the gray bat, are at risk. And so this white nose syndrome is causing a lot of trouble in northeastern bat populations. And the syndrome is actually related to a fungus.
Oh.
And you like the name of this particular fungus. So why don't you say it?
Oh, yeah. It's, if I can pronounce it, it's Geomyces destructens.
Yeah. Pretty serious name.
It could be the name of a metal band.
So it's thought to be a non-native pathogen that was recently introduced to the United States. And it's actually, it's related to Geomyces pinorum, which causes skin infections in humans.
That also would make a good. I think a band name. Just saying.
Yeah. What was the other band name that you came up with?
The place where the area of the cave where the bat holds up and for the winter is called a hibernacula.
Okay.
Or it's a hibernacula. It's the plural. But yeah, that's like if you're out there right now and you have a death metal band and you're like, what are we going to call ourselves? Hibernaculum. That's what you need to go with.
Yeah. Okay. So back to Geomyces destructans, the other band name. So far, white nose syndrome has only been found in the insect-eating cave hibernating bats. They haven't found it in bats that use, like, buildings or other man-made structures. And biologists don't think it's actually going to be found in urban environments.
Okay.
Bats with this particular syndrome, aside from looking like they've been eating powdered donuts or doing lines or whatever it is these bats have been up to, they have skin ulcers that the fungus causes. And like Robert said before, they're, you know, really, really skinny. And what happens is their hibernating patterns are disrupted.
Yeah, they start flying out to, like, eat bugs in the dead of winter. Which isn't going to happen.
Right. That's not going to happen. You know what this reminded me of? Sometimes I read to one of my kids this. Did you ever hear the book Blueberries for Sal?
No.
Okay. So there's this book, and Sal and her mom, Robert McCloskey.
Okay.
One like a Caldecott. I don't know. It's one of these classic kids' books. So they go out, you know, and they're picking blueberries, Sal and her mom. And there's a mother bear and a baby bear who are eating berries just to store up for the winter. And so I kind of just imagine, you know, what if, you know, a grizzly bear woke up out of its hibernation and, you know, started crashing around the winter trying to find these berries. It's not going to happen, right?
Right?
So same deal with the bats. They're not going to be able to find their favorite prey, which is insects.
Yeah, so it's disrupting their behavior as well as like hurting their minds as well as their bodies.
So the fungus ultimately could cause them to die by way of starvation. So biologists likely think that white nose syndrome is spreading from environments to bats and then from bats to bats because they live in these crazy close quarters, mm-hmm. you know, with thousands upon thousands of bats.
And they're keeping actually encouraging cavers and spelunkers to stay out of these caves as well.
Right, because we might be part of the problem.
Right, spreading it from one cave environment to another.
Yeah, so the U.S. Forest Service cracked down and they closed, like, thousands of caves in mm-hmm. 2009.
And they're trying to also see about, like, raising some in captivity to sort of safeguard the populations. But last we heard, it hasn't actually been working all that well.
Yeah, the National Zoo was awarded some funds to raise Virginia big-eared bats, one of the endangered species of bats that they're worried about.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a population of 40, and I think they were left with 11. It's just really tricky. Like, they don't know how to raise bats in captivity. They're having trouble getting the bats to eat from these, you know, trays with little worms on them.
Yeah, it's just not their natural way of doing things at all.
Yeah, we don't really have
they
a knack
need,
for
they
that.
They need to get a bunch of kids or you know, your childhood friends out there throwing bugs up in the air for them. That's what's going to work. Shoes full of worms.
So the thing about white nose syndrome is that there's no cure for it. So we really just have to contain its spread, mm-hmm. right? Another tricky thing about bats is that they're really susceptible to extinction because of the way they reproduce.
Yeah, each female has one baby bat, like per cycle. So, I mean, it's...
Per year,
yeah. So it's, you one female bat dies, that's going to really cut into their population. They're also long living. They live about, 30 years?
Yeah.
So they're some animals that reproduce at a greater rate wouldn't be as hard hit by this.
Like a bunny.
Yeah, bunnies. Yeah. So it's really unfair. Why are there no bunny diseases going around? White bunny nose.
Isn't there that one? What is it called? Tularemia?
This is what
happens when you live in Atlanta, like capital of public health. So the bottom line about this fungal infection is that they're not sure if by itself it's causing the bats to die. They've tested some infected bats because they want to know if the infection is occurring with other stuff like viruses mm-hmm. or bacteria or parasites, but they haven't found anything yet.
Yeah, it could be something that's affecting their immune function and making them more susceptible to this white fungus.
And the other thing is, just because they've tested for known organisms doesn't mean that there's not some new virus out there that is mm-hmm. At work in the bats, in the insect-eating bats.
Which is another reason to keep cavers and spelunkers away, because you never know when one of these is going to make the jump from one species to another.
Although, so far, they don't think that white nose syndrome is harmful to humans.
So far. I'm just saying.
Don't be doing that. I don't want you to go spreading false alarm.
Okay.
So I do want to talk a little bit about fungal infections because they're pretty freaking interesting. The thing about them, like we were just saying, is that they're opportunistic, right? So, of course, fungus can cause diseases in people who have regular old immune systems. Like there's one in Arizona, that's transmitted through the dust. You know, if you breathe in the soil, it's transmitted by that. You wind mm-hmm. up with pulmonary problems and breathing problems, whatever. But a lot of times you'll find fungal infection occurring in people with subpar immune systems. Say you have a person with AIDS whose white blood cell count has fallen pretty darn low. All of a sudden, some run-of-the-mill fungal infection, say like thrush, is going to start giving you all sorts of headaches. But one of the most feared fungal infections stems from Cryptococcus. So after TB, cryptococcal meningitis has emerged as one of these like crazy fungal infections that is really just dealing the final blow to patients with AIDS. So it's kind of akin, if you imagine this in bats, imagine that there's something at work in the bat's immune system, and then maybe this white nose syndrome is dealing the final blow. The bottom line is they don't know. I mean, at least in people with fungal infections, they can treat them with antifungals, or, if you have AIDS, you can treat them with antiretrovirals. Mm-hmm. But how are we going to do that with bats? Good luck.
You might be asking yourself, if you're not just a natural animal lover and bat lover, why do we care? Why are we sinking money into this? And the reason is that bats, in addition to just being, awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah. They eat a lot of insects. They play an important role in the ecosystem. And what they do is they eat lots of insects.
Oh, and they also inspired Batman.
Well, yeah, but Batman will still be here if these guys go the way of the dodo.
This is true.
But the little brown bat, one of the most common North American bat species, can catch and eat as many as 1,200 mosquitoes in 1 hour. The famous colony of Mexican tree-tail bats that lives underneath the Congress Avenue Bridge in Austin, Texas, will eat up to 30,000 pounds of insects in a single night.
That is crazy.
That'd be like, I don't even know the mathematical proportions there, but I mean, it sounds like if you just hit the buffet every evening and just load it up on like General Tso's chicken.
Yeah, and these guys are still flying around for the whole night.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think humans could walk if they ate this much. I mean, the Komodo dragon could maybe do it.
Yeah, definitely the Komodo dragon could do it.
Agriculturally speaking, a lot of these are pests that harm our crops. So if you don't have bats there to take care of them, then how are you going to get rid of them? What, are you going to spread more DDT around? Which, in addition to being rather harmful to the environment, a number of these insects have evolved resistances to it.
Yeah, so you remove the bats from the equation and things could get a little dicier, agriculturally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
But I should stress that it's not exactly bats alone are controlling mosquito populations or insect populations. It is sort of a multi-pronged approach.
Yeah. I mean, it's like they're a part of the ecosystem. The ecosystem is like this big Jenga puzzle. And if you start removing little blocks from the Jenga tower, then the tower's going to get unstable.
Yeah, especially if you play Jenga with your feet.
Yeah, which I
still... Have you ever done that?
No.
We tried once. It was really hard.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It sounds like a disaster.
Yeah, but you know, it's Jenga, so it's not like anything's going to
break. It sounds like an analogy. It's like, well, you're just playing Jenga with your feet on that one.
Yeah, maybe. Well, so aside from agricultural implications, there are also implications for public health, as you might imagine. So mosquitoes like to carry diseases such as malaria or West Nile. So all of a sudden, if you have a booming mosquito population, we could see an uptick in those kind of diseases in humans.
Yeah, I mean, you can actually purchase bat houses to encourage bats to live on your property. So they'll eat the mosquitoes, you know.
I would like to have one, actually.
Yeah, I really want to get one of those, and I want to get an owl house, because I like having owls about. Maybe a woodpecker house. I don't know. Whatever I can have flying around, eating bugs is good.
So what can we do about white nose syndrome? Well, you know, there are a couple things. We could try to contain the spread, as the U.S. Forest Service has done, you know, closing caves and things like that. We can always throw some money at the problem.
Yeah, and encourage your lawmakers to support funding.
And we can try to learn how to raise endangered bats in captivity fast, as the Smithsonian Zoo is doing with sort of mixed luck. Hey, actually, you can even blog about it. There's a white nose blog hosted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I did check it out. There was only one entry.
Oh,
it was really cute though. She was a biologist, and she put you know her.
Oh,
kind
I thought
of
it was by the bats.
No,
like
no.
That would really be more interesting. If
yeah,
the bats were blogging.
It was a biologist blogging about bats. Try saying that 10 times fast. And you also can help out in the bat fight. You can report active winter or summer roosting sites. You can
if you see bats flying around in the winter, like a bunch of them, not like a lone bat, but like a bunch of bats, you need to contact somebody.
Your local wildlife service. And, you know, you can always build a bat house.
Yeah. Especially since most of these cases have been isolated to caves. The more bat houses, the better.
So in case all of this doesn't really make you care about bats, then our final point is, what about bat guano? Bat guano, as it turns out, is an amazingly useful substance.
Yeah, it plays a vital role in cave ecologies. I imagine everybody's seen the television series Planet Earth from a few years back.
Yeah.
Same people who made Life.
Yeah, which we wrote a whole lot of content around.
But there's a whole episode about the ecology inside a particular cave, and there's like just a mountain of bat guano, and like their insects live off the guano and live in the guano. Take that away, remove the bats from the equation, and there are a number of other species that depend on the bats. Like the snake. There's a snake that jumps out of like he's blind, and he like hears the bat flying by, and he'll just strike out and like grab a bat out of midair. It's amazing.
That is pretty amazing. Yeah, so bat guano is actually pretty useful for its nitrogen. It's pretty nitrogen heavy. And that's pretty useful when it comes to, you know, say, making a bomb.
Oh, good.
Or making household cleaner.
Oh, yeah. Actually, two things on that. First of all, if I remember correctly, there's a part in Cormac McCarthy's Blood Meridian where they're being trailed by these, by one tribe or another, this ragtag bunch of cowboys.
Okay.
And they're completely out of ammo, and they end up like hitting a cave and like scraping up all this bat guano, and then they think they go to a volcano, and they get some more ingredients to make gunpowder, and they like put it all together at the last minute and fight off the villains. So I mean, they're all villains in that book. But then and as far as it being a cleaning agent, that I guess could maybe be used to one's advantage in places like Jalapa. You encourage the bats to come in to use the restroom on everything, and then you've got a natural cleaning agent right there.
Right, then you don't have to hire somebody to do it. You just, you know, get the bats.
Yeah,
cheap labor.
You just get them to scrub, and then you got it taken care of, yeah.
Good points, Robert.
So, if you want to hear more, you can come check out the blogs on the homepage, where you can find out what our podcasts for the week are about, and learn about other bits of weird science-y news.
Yeah, and you can always shoot us a comment, too. We love to hear from you. Whether you have a question about bats or white nose syndrome or a suggestion for a podcast, send us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the howstuffworks.com homepage.
I'm Jordan Gonsalves, and I'm a journalist. Join me on my new podcast, But We Loved, coming May 15th, where queer elders recount the amazing history they've lived through.
In the middle of Wall Street, they stopped traffic. They were doing a die-in.
And in the process, share little gems of wisdom for the next generation.
The key is to understanding yourself, learning to love and embrace yourself.
You can listen to But We Loved May 15th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
Well, how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.